WSBTRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hey, Irish fans, this is Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports. I'm Mike Sullivan, along with Mike Brammer, and we'll be talking about Notre Dame's Big East loss to Louisville in a key matchup down in at Freedom Hall. Bram, what do you think? I mean, you know, the final score looks like it was a close game, but we know the Irish were scrambling just to make it respectable. But what do you take away from this game? Devastating loss, you know, what do you think about it?
Well, I mean, clearly going into the game, you couldn't have sat there and said you're expecting Notre Dame to win. I mean, that's a tough place to play at. Louisville has won 8 straight up to this point. They're probably arguably playing the best ball in the Big East at this point. So you can't sit there and say, look, we should have won that game going in. So, you know, it could be one of those psychological losses. I mean, you just mentioned that we didn't get blown out, but the score was 98-85. So the NCAA selection committee looks at that and says, well, I didn't watch the game, but they only lost by 5. So
right, yeah, I mean, that's just it. It wasn't a blowout. Well, if you watched it, you felt like we were never really in it. But you know that a lot of key people didn't see that whole game. And when you look at it on paper, this was as close a game at Louisville as they've had in Big East play. So, you know, maybe there's a few things you take. Maybe there's a silver lining on it. Certainly, look, I don't think this exposed us as frauds or pretenders or really did serious damage to our reputation because, as you pointed out, I mean, Louisville is darn good, and they're playing as good as anybody in the country.
Yeah, and I was disappointed with our play early in the game. I mean, we didn't handle the press very well. We looked a little exposed there. But I'd also argue that a bunch of things didn't go our way. We didn't hit very many shots, obviously, in that first 15-minute frame of the game. But I thought there were a ton of travels going on that were not being called.
Yeah, but you always think that's kind of your MO your whole life.
I know, but I'm just, you know, when you're a referee and you're looking right at it and the guy shuffles his feet and it's an advantage, you got to call that. Well, you know, the over-the-back stuff, too, I'm getting tired of that. They're just not calling it. And, you know, teams are taking advantage of that. And they did call it a couple times where Herring Gotti got pushed, but there were several early in the game, and that set the tone, and that put us behind.
Well, you know, I think referees, here's my bias. I think referees give the benefit of the doubt to the more athletic team. And, you know, when they jump over us, it's easy to not see that they also jumped through us to get to the loose ball or the rebound. And I thought a number of times, you know, Herring Gotti, the guys were over his back, but or Kurz's back, but they're out jumping us, and so they get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and those are just things that added to it. Is that why we were down 15 in the first half? No, of course not. But
let's look at what were the key factors in the loss from your point of view? You know, what would you attribute the loss to?
I think that they got us a little bit rattled with the press. You know, we came down, and typically what we've done all season long is as soon as we break half court, if it's, you know, 2-on-2 or 3-on-3, we're going to get an open shot and shoot it, and we did. The problem is we weren't hitting.
Well, you know what? The opening sequence of the game didn't seem to me like it was a problem of us not hitting shots. It was a problem of they made everything. I mean, I thought the problem initially was defensively. As that was our biggest problem in that opening sequence where they really took control of the game.
Yeah, I mean, clearly that's just one of the things. We did not play real good defense in that first 15-minute frame. I thought we did play a lot better in the second half. But still, there were, you know, you look at some of those plays, the big guy in the second half where he just cut to the basket from the top of the key, he gets a bounce pass and slams it home. I mean, that kind of stuff you cannot have. That should never happen. That was a little disappointing to see because we haven't been seeing that all year long. I mean, that was all of a sudden you see us break down in pieces and it looked like we're losing our confidence, and that's what you didn't want to see happen. But, well, I mean, we closed it at the end. I mean, you can't sit here and say, hey, this is a horrendous loss, because it wasn't.
I mean, I tell you, Louisville is good. They're really well coached. You know, that Rick Pitino obviously is one of the great minds in basketball. And with the talent that he gets at Louisville, that's a lethal combination. They've got some really smart basketball players and really skilled basketball players, and he puts them in positions where they can do their thing. In terms of matchups in the game, you know, you look and you say, well, we're going to have to control the tempo of the game a little bit. Louisville can force you into playing real fast. And although we like to play fast, didn't you feel like they made us play too fast?
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, we pretty much have controlled the tempo in the games this year. I mean, I think we have kind of set the pace for every game that we've been in, and this was one of those rare occasions where we didn't. I mean, it looked like after the first three or four possessions, we were kind of like, all right, what do we do? Should we slow it up here, or should we? Now, granted, some of that is when you're missing shots, you tend to have that, you know, you lose a little confidence, and all of a sudden things don't look so great. But it seemed like we were a bit rattled. They just got us off our game. You know, one of the things Pitino does really well is press. And what you saw was not that it was a 100% full court press, but their guys get in the right spots. They got their arms as long as they can possibly be. They're in the exact right spot defensively. And it forced us to make pinpoint passes. And we you know, it just got us a bit rattled. It wasn't something that we were used to seeing. And when we did break it, we just didn't knock down those shots.
Well, yeah, let's talk about a little bit how we handled the pressure. I thought one of the key, one of the things I was disappointed in the game was the play of our backcourt. You mentioned the poor shooting. And, you know, I'll grant you, McElhinney didn't shoot the ball well, etc. I think defensively, that was the first place where we broke down. And then, yeah, our shooting wasn't great. But the decision-making of the backcourt, I thought, was really bad against the pressure. And there were times when, you know, Jackson or McElhinney, they just dribbled it right into traps and pressure, made really silly passes. And I thought that's where the mismatch took place, the biggest mismatch of the game. I thought our frontline guys all did pretty good job. Kurz was his normal, steady self. We'll get to the big guy in a little bit. You know, Ayers did a great job. Hilsland did a great job. But McElhinney and Jackson really looked outmatched.
I thought so. And even on the defensive end, you know, there was several occurrences where McElhinney kind of came in to pinch and help out. And he really shouldn't have. He shouldn't have left this guy in the corner because there was another one of our big men that could have slid over from the help side. He ends up sliding in to help out, and he leaves a wide-open look in the corner, and he just did that too many times. And
I thought we were really slow to recover on the perimeter, too, defensively, where we just looked a step slow getting out to the shooters,
yeah,
for
and
whatever
then,
reason.
And when you're shooting at home, I mean, you're going to have guys that are going to knock that down because they're used to it.
They have one of those nights shooting like we did, like we against Syracuse, like we often do, and they certainly had one of those nights. They hit on all cylinders, great, you know, great atmosphere for them. And we knew it was going to be a tough matchup, like you said. You couldn't realistically go in there thinking that you were going to win that game. You hoped to steal one, and we didn't quite do it. But let's talk about the two very bright spots in the game. First, let's talk about Ryan Ayers, 17 points off the bench, and you know your thoughts on what Ayers was able to do.
Well, he's definitely a guy that's really playing well right now, and I mean, a real class act, too. It's not an easy thing to be starting and all of a sudden get that job yanked from you and then actually to increase your productivity. I mean, that just tells you the kind of guy he is. I like the way that he comes into the game and adds that dimension of being able to drill that shot from outside, but he actually is not too bad defensively. I mean, he gets his arms up. He seems to anticipate. He knows where to go. You know, he's just one of those ball players that's a perfect sixth man for us, and he's definitely showing it.
Right. You got to love what he does defensively with quickness and size. He's a good rebounder, and, you know, certainly, you know, he handles the ball well and shoots it well. He's a great weapon off the bench. And, again, I like what Hilsland does. The combination of those two guys has really been good for us, and Ayers stepped up big last night. But, of course, Heron Goede was just ridiculous. 40 points, 12 rebounds, and of course he broke, busted out some three-point shooting down the stretch. You know, I think he locked up Biggie's player of the game. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Player of the year, I should say.
Yeah, he without a doubt. I think, you know, you look at his three best games, and they were against the three top teams in the conference. So it's hard to argue that he wouldn't be it. I mean, I think he's an absolute lock for that. And that's good for him. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out because, you know, Luke's going to have to keep that aside. He's going to have to get that out of his mind because the fact of the matter is, I mean, we've got a tournament.
What do you mean?
Well, in other words, I mean, if he does, you know, with all these accolades coming his way, you hate to see him. Now, granted, I thought what he did at the end of the game was what you had to do. I mean, we had to shoot a three. I mean, he buried some threes. I don't want to see him start shooting that now all of a sudden because
that's what I was going to ask. I think that's going to be an interesting development. You get the sense, and particularly reading the South Bend Tribune today, that Bray might want him to take some of those shots when it's in rhythm and the flow of the offense, you know, what are good looks. He showed he could knock him down. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him look for that shot a little more.
If it's a wide-open shot and this guy is not coming out on him, I agree. He can take at least try it a couple times, but that's not the offense I think we want when we're limited to X number of possessions in a game to have Luke Heron go to shooting a three. I mean, I think that with Ayers and with McElarney, I mean, those are the guys that even Kurz, I would argue. I'd rather have Kurz take a couple more
threes. Kurz is a good three-point shooter. I agree. That's not where we're going to make our living. That's not where Heron Goody's going to make his living, but it is a nice added dimension. And it will, you know, open things up if they've got to step out a little further and guard him out there. You know,
and he does.
Because
I mean, he'll
take him off the dribble, too.
He does. That's the one thing that you don't realize about Heron Goody. He is quick. And I thought, you know where you saw that was in that play where he had to sprint full court against a guard, grab the ball, and then throw it off of the guard as he was going out of bounds. I mean, I think that right there displayed some athleticism that Heron Goody has as big as he is. I mean, he sprinted and he outran him. He outran him to the ball.
And those are the things that make him such a great ball player. I mean, he's relentless and competes 40 minutes every night. And, you know, looking at the, aside from those three-pointers, he hit a lot of perimeter shots last night. He didn't have a bunch of great low post moves where you're just like, man, this guy is unguardable. He had a lot of garbage buckets, and he finished on some nice passes from other people. But because he's working hard to be in the right position all the time, he gets a lot of those garbage points. So even on a night where, you know, not like he just dominated in one-on-one moves, he put up a huge point total because he knows he's always working hard. He's always in the right spot at the right time.
Yeah, he's... I mean, you can't have 16 double-doubles and not be going at it every single night. I mean, it's obvious he does that. Getting back to the point I was making earlier, Notre Dame is a very unselfish team. They don't have stars on this team, i.e., except for Heron Goody, but you'd hate to see all of a sudden that now enter the mix where Luke is a notch above everybody else, and then that starts to affect the psyche of the team. I don't see that happening. But you don't want that happening going into tournament time. And
well, that's a great point. I think you make an excellent point. I don't think it's going to happen because we've got, you know, McElarney. I mean, I think McElarney's got a legitimate shot at first-team All-Big East, right? Torrey Jackson certainly is getting a lot of accolades and is a guy that can carry the team in stretches. So because this is a well-balanced team and I think they like each other and Bray does a great job and managing those things, I'm not too worried about that star ego problem developing. Although you can make the argument that those were some of the issues that affected the Chris Thomas teams. But I'm encouraged by the chemistry of this team.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, again, whether Heron Goody starts out the game shooting a three, the next one we have. So
let's talk about the next game coming up and implications for Big East standings in the NCAA as a result of this loss to Louisville. First off, DePaul on Sunday. It's a huge game. I mean, every game in the Big East following a loss has that feeling like, man, this is a must-win. In terms of our first-round bye in the Big East, it's pretty close to being a must-win. We sit in fourth right now because Connecticut has the tiebreaker. And you got to assume, you know, everybody wins out, and, you know, you're going to need to get this one at DePaul.
Yeah, and I think that, luckily for us, I think the schedule favors us as far as the other three teams in front of us. So you would hope that, I mean, we're basically playing St. John's, South Florida, and DePaul. I would argue DePaul and South Florida are no gimmies. That's going to be real tough wins for us. Both of them on the road, they're going to be critical, and I would hate to see us do any worse than 2-1 going down the stretch. I mean,
I'd be disappointed in 2-1.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a tough place to play at DePaul. It'll be interesting to see how we bounce back from a disappointing loss, but it would not surprise me if we end up losing a really close game at DePaul. It wouldn't be devastating for me, but you'd love to see us finish out the season going 3-0 heading into the tournament. I mean, I think that would be a great accomplishment.
Well, I tell you, I would really be disappointed if we lost one of these last three games because it might cost us that first-round bye. And I don't really want to be the 4 seed, the 4 or 5 seed, because I think that means we play Marquette again, and I just don't like the matchup with Marquette. And, you know, winning the last three, I think we have a decent shot then of being the 3rd seed, the 3 seed. And I think we draw a better matchup in our first game in the Big East tournament. In terms of NCAA seeding, again, I don't think this loss is devastating, but if we want to be as, how high do you think this team can go in terms of seeding in the NCAA?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of that will depend on what happens when they do in the Big East tournament. But I, if you were looking right now today, I'd probably say it wouldn't surprise me if they stick us at a five right now. It's going to depend on what happens the rest of the season. I think if we win out the season, if we go 3-0 these last three games, and we win at least one game in the Big East tournament, we could be as high as a three seed.
I think we could, we're 3, 4, 5, depending on what happens the rest of the way out. But, again, that's why the DePaul game is so huge, because we really are playing for seeding in both postseason tournaments, and we need to finish strong. The Louisville loss is not devastating, and I don't think it even is a confidence-shattering type loss because of the way we finished. Had we got beat double digits or never made a run, I think maybe now doubts creep in about, hey, can we really hang with the more talented teams when we're not in the Joyce Center? But because we made that run, I'm not too worried about the confidence level of the team.
Yeah, I really do think it was a psychological loss. But again, because I think people are going to look at it on paper and say, hey, 90-85 at Louisville late in the season, that's not that bad.
Well, hang on, I don't understand. You think it was a psychological loss?
I don't think. In other words, I think that the loss wasn't nearly as bad as it could have been if you watched the game.
So,
I
mean, psychologically, it's a win is what...
My point is that the loss really isn't that bad. I mean, thankfully for us.
I would agree with you.
You know, it could have been a whole heck of a lot worse, and it looked like it was going to be a lot worse at about the 8-minute mark of that second half. I mean, it was not looking good. But, you know, we did. We played hard at the end. We nailed some threes. I mean, the fact of the matter is it was an 8-point loss until we banked in a three with 2 seconds to go. So, you know, we lose by five, but again, unless you watch that, you don't know that. And you say, well, wait a minute, they lost 90-85. Heron Gordy had 40 points. That sounds like a heck of a game to me, so that could play to our favor.
Yeah, I would agree with you. The one thing that I would take away from this is I thought our guys competed and played hard, obviously, the entire game. We just kept coming after them and came up a little short, but we didn't quit and pack it in. And that I'm proud of that, and that gives me hope that this team's psyche is not damaged.
Yeah, and if you really analyze it, 90-85, well, wait a minute, what happens if McElarney hits two or three? I mean, holy cow, wait a minute, this game is not that far out of reach. So, yeah, I really think that we're going to come out of this in better shape.
Okay, we're out of time. We'll be back on Sunday after the DePaul game. Until then, for Mike Brammer, I'm Mike Sullivan. You've been listening to Dome and Domer. We'll see you next time.